Dear Junkie Journal, my hope is this podcast reaches the people that had a chaotic and traumatic childhood, who not only survived it, but lived with the after effects and continue to see the light in the dark. To the people that have to look themselves in the mirror every single day to say, keep going. You are not your trauma. When I began this journey, I had no intention of doing a podcast. In truth, I was encouraged to write these stories down in a journal by my life coach and friend, Julie. So the first season is really going to be based on the junk in my own trunk. The second season will be more geared towards advice, coaching. You'd be surprised just how much you carry over from childhood. So if you're following this story so far, Marcus, my 17-year-old, has started RCHOP at Strong Memorial in Rochester and is being transferred to Westchester to start a new protocol called FAB-LMB with Dr. Mitchell Cairo. Now, Dr. Mitchell Cairo is like a world-renowned doctor in B-cell lymphoma, and we're really hopeful that he can help us. We want Marcus to have the highest possible survival rate. So we go to this hospital. We're at the Children's Hospital. We show up there, and it is most definitely a children's hospital. What a difference from Strong Memorial. Strong Memorial is geared towards adults, you know? So there's several adults that sit in chairs and everybody's getting chemo at the same time. It's very sad and depressing. So Marcus, this 17-year-old kid, is sitting there with people 60 plus, and it was dreary. It was just sad. So now we walk into this hospital and it's full of colors. All the walls are vibrant colors. There's paintings and colorings all over the walls and everyone's happy. The doctors are super happy and bubbly and the nurses are happy and it's just a different environment. We get to the floor where Marcus is going to be obviously staying. And you start to see, that's where you start to see the little kids with cancer. And this is the cancer center for the children, and it was kind of like crazy. So the first thing I saw when we were walking down the hall was this little kid, no more than 8 years old probably, and he's bald. He looks like he's 80. He has a walker. I couldn't stop staring at this poor child. He was walking like he was so weak, you know, weak and sick and sad, and he's walking so slow. It was the saddest thing ever. And because he was bald and he didn't have any hair and stuff, he just looked like this little old man. That's all I could think of. But picture, like, what it looked like was, like, the center was like a nurse's station, and there were doorways like a hotel all the way around the nurse's station. All the doors would always be open. Always were open. Rarely did you see a closed door. But you could clearly see little kids on, like, ventilators and parents just sitting by their bedside. More kids puking, other kids coloring and playing, and other kids crying. It's like you could see every different age, you know, from Marcus's age and under, really. And all different stages of their sicknesses. It was really just unreal to see. Really kind of humbles you and shocks you. It's like you can't change this in canes and crazy things, and they'd be up there just singing their little hearts out, happy as can be, because, like, it's different for kids. Kids haven't learned, like, they don't really know they're sick, most of them. So they're just like, all they know is they don't feel well, right? But they don't know they're sick. And so they're very resilient. They try really hard to have a good time. But you find yourself really rooting for them, and seeing them happy and seeing them do well just makes your heart swell with so much joy. It's unexplainable. You'd have to witness it. I hope you don't have to, but if you do have to and you are going through it with your child, it is a humbling experience, as you know. So, you know, we start the protocol. They take Marcus's, you know, vitals and blood samples and make sure that all of his levels are good. So, like, the rule of thumb is if your red blood cell count, white blood cell count, platelets are good, then you can get chemo. If they're not high enough because your last chemo treatment knocked them down too far, then you got to wait longer or you got to have a transfusion. And so, you know, the doctors usually make the call on that. Marcus was pretty good, so he did have his chemo treatment the first time that we were there. I noticed right off the bat between pediatric and adult protocols is Marcus, the pediatric protocol made Marcus immediately lose all of his hair. His hair, his eyebrows, his eyelashes, everything. You know, he was just, he certainly looked like a cancer child. I remember him telling me, I don't even recognize myself in the mirror. And I thought, you know, I don't even recognize this kid anymore. It's crazy how much hair defines a person's face. It's really just, wow. It's definitely a big part of, you know, the way someone looks. Anyways, Marcus went through a lot. Within the first few treatments, I was like, holy shit, you know, this stuff is strong. Marcus was getting chemo in his spine and, you know, regular chemo, or like, you know, every day was a new chemo or a different chemo. It was really hard on him. It wasn't just physically that he changed. He had lost all, you know, drastically had lost all this weight. But he was sick. He was so sick. He was nauseous constantly. He had like sores from his throat down through his digestive tract, which, you know, it was all the way down to his colon. Like, he couldn't eat. He couldn't go to the bathroom. He kept getting this infection or syndrome, I guess. It was called Steven Johnson syndrome. And it had this atopical, I'd have to look it up, but it had this second factor to it. So whatever second factor he had to Steven Johnson syndrome made his skin slough off. So he was burned from head to toe. He was just incredibly uncomfortable. When we first went there, I literally thought that I was going to make sure he didn't eat any kind of food that would feed the cancer. And I was gung-ho that I was going to do all these things I read on the internet, you know. And turns out, please don't do that. Please don't do that to your child. If your child has cancer, please do not think that you should limit their food intake, because that was a mistake that I had thought I was going to make until I realized how much weight he was losing. Then realization kicked in, and I realized I would be happy if this poor kid could, you know, keep anything down. If he wants to eat pizza every day for a month, I'm for it. Go ahead. If you want to eat ice cream, I don't care. Just eat something. You just want them to keep the weight on. So there was this time, so we're 6 months in, and, you know, the doctors are doing the rounds. So they did this thing every day where you'd have the oncologist and you'd have a set of computers that were on a roller, and you'd have about eight different doctors standing around the main doctor, and they'd come to each door and they talk to you. How's it going, Marcus? You know, how do you feel today? Did you eat anything yesterday? Your blood levels are here, here, and here. We plan on doing chemo on this day. You didn't do so well with this. Okay, Marcus, you have an infection, so we got to treat you with antibiotics over here. You know, it was like infection after infection after infection, by the way. Expect that. So if your child is on a protocol for pediatrics, chances are they're going to put them on very high dose chemo, which causes chronic infections. It's just back to back to back. And the infections are not like, it could be a normal cold, but because they have no immune system anymore, it's life threatening. And so it's constant fevers, constant antibiotics, constant scare of septic and, you know, organs failing. And it's just overwhelming, a lot of it. I can't believe that you can get used to this, but you actually can. This will be your routine. The things you are going to live by are the numbers. Where, you know, we have no control as parents. This disease is just, you have no control. And that's the hardest part about being a parent. The only thing you can control, or you feel like maybe you could control, is knowing where the numbers are. Where are their red blood cells? Where are their white blood cells? You know, if they got an infection or a fever while their kidneys are, you know, their numbers and kidneys are down, is that a good sign? Is that a bad sign? What does that mean? You know, you just sort of like research everything. You know, everything becomes about numbers. Anyways, so they come around, they come to the door, and Marcus and I are standing there, and I'm anxious. You know, the last time we did this, Marcus's entire body was full of green, and it was incredibly traumatic. So I'm waiting, and I'm very anxious. You know, is this shit working? God, I pray to God that this treatment is working. I have no idea what I'm going to do if this treatment isn't working. So Marcus and I are standing there. They pull up, and they say, all right, guys, you ready to see the results of the PET scan? Me and Marcus look at each other. You know, we look back at the doctors. We don't say nothing. The doctors spin around the computer, and we see the outline of Marcus's body, but we don't see any green. So Marcus and I are like, I look at Marcus, he looks at me, and we're in complete shock. And we both smile, and we're like, but we're like suspicious. We're like, what the? And we look back at them, and they are all smiling and clapping their hands. And they're like, Marcus, you're in remission. Congratulations. And Marcus started crying. It was the most beautiful moment, the happiest moment. You know, he starts crying. I'm crying. We hug. We're so happy. And we can't stop crying because of the relief, because of how, you know, when you're anxious for 6 months about numbers and is this working, isn't it working, blah, 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 you know. And after all that he had been through, it was such a relief to know that this was working. Like, holy shit, this kid is beating cancer. It was wonderful. It was the best feeling in the entire world to be part of and to witness and to have. Thank God. And so, you know, the good news was the chemo was working. The bad news was that we still had to do treatment, which I was like, man, well, why do we have to keep doing treatment? You know, this kid is beating this. You know, he beat it. The cancer's gone. And they're just like, listen, you know, he has blood cancer. So if your child has lymphoma or some kind of blood cancer, you know, leukemia, whatever, they have to try to kill every last cell, you know. So I knew, you know, another 6 months of this was going to be incredibly hard. Like, the scariest part was, like, I was like, man, we barely got through the first 6 months. How the fuck is he going to go through the next 6 months? And it got harder. I'm not going to sugarcoat this for you. Chemo is accumulative, right? So it does get harder before it gets easier. So easier part is we're cancer-free and the chemo's over. The harder part is chemo, more scares, more septic, more infections, more life-altering, circumstances and organ failures. And it was such a scary journey. I knew the next 6 months were going to be pretty hard. I hadn't realized that they were going to test every bit of Marcus's strength and every last mustard seed of faith that I had to get through it. It was so difficult. But the next story is going to be about some moments that Marcus had and I had through this ordeal that were miraculous. I mean, no doubt in my mind, is there a God? No, not everyone believes in God, and I understand that. I believe in God. I also believe in science, and I believe that chemo cured Marcus, but I think ultimately that was God's decision.